Hey, my name is Zenu, and you're listening to Anti-Moon Boy News. We got a great episode for you guys today. We will continue our coverage of MoneroCon. We got four more presentations we're going over. We're also going to be talking about the Kids Act, which passed, which is a pretty typical attempt by the government to trample on our rights for the sake of the children. So we're going to take a look at that, as well as the Microsoft controversy in which their telemetry is being used to spy on people. And this was always implied that this was the case, but we now have proof of it. So we're going to talk about that as well. Lots to get to. If you like the content, feel free to send me a super chat at xmrchat.com/Zenu. I also have donation links in the description box. And let's get right to it. We're going to actually start today on MoneroCon. Figure I've been putting these in the middle of the episodes, but figure we can switch some things up here. And yeah, day two has now started. I will say some of these videos do not match the schedule that was online. So I'm trying to do the best I can of going in order of when the videos were released. But the schedule that is on the MoneroCon website, some of those presentations aren't appearing on the YouTube channel. And by the way, if you weren't aware, Orange Friend, who is the sponsor of MoneroCon, they threw the event on. They actually have uploaded all of the presentations on YouTube. So I encourage you to go there, check it out if you are interested in checking out any of these presentations that I am talking about. I'm reviewing them directly from YouTube. So you can go check it out yourself and have a good time learning about Monero and Monero adjacent things. We begin today with Arctic Mine, the legend. He's been around forever. And within Monero, he is best known for his dynamic block size and tail emission. These are concepts that he has introduced, and it has had a really huge impact on Monero, really since he has introduced these concepts. And the reason for this is because we have seen Bitcoin have issues when it is used a lot due to this concept of a fee market. And basically, the block size of Bitcoin the block size for every Bitcoin block is capped at 2 megabytes, right? Can't go higher than that. And so because of that, to send your transaction as quick as possible, in times where there's a lot of transactions being sent, you have to send a higher transaction fee. And you're essentially bidding against other people to include your transaction in the block. And it has led to situations where the transaction fees are extremely high. It gets worse, though, in that because Bitcoin has declining block rewards until it reaches the 21 million, the miners are soon going to have to depend on these transaction fees. So because of that, logically, the transaction fees will continue to go up because that is how the miners are going to be supported. So it kind of makes a situation where Bitcoin being used as digital cash isn't that ideal, because if everybody was using Bitcoin in the world, the transaction fees would be so high that sending your Bitcoin would cost more than just holding it. Like by just sending, let's say $50 worth of Monero, the transaction fee might be $48, $50 worth of Bitcoin, the transaction fee might be $48 worth of Bitcoin, right? And so it makes a situation where people won't even want to send Bitcoin. Now, in response to this, over time, we have had this alternative that has been propped up and supported by Bitcoin Core and a lot of the people within Bitcoin called Lightning Network. And the idea here is Lightning Network is going to handle the transactions being used, and Bitcoin will just remain as the settlement layer. This is kind of the the cope that they've come up with. The problem here is that people aren't really using Bitcoin, period. And the reality is, you know, Lightning Network has some cool things. I don't actually hate Lightning Network. I actually talked about this last week. I think Lightning Network has some cool features to it. I think it's a cool hobby project. I don't think it's going to be much more than that, though. It's very clear to me that the primary use case of Bitcoin right now is buying and holding. And so therefore, Bitcoin transactions have actually kind of, you know, gone down over time. They haven't, you know, stayed high. They've kind of slowly have gone down. If you look at the transaction graph for Bitcoin, it's kind of lost some of its usage of digital cash. And maybe some of that has been to Lightning Network. But if you look at actual usage statistics from merchants, it's pretty clear that Monero has actually taken a lot of that market share of actual usage. And so most Bitcoin usage today, you know, Bitcoin probably has 10 times more transactions per day than Monero. Off the top of my head, that sounds about right. A lot of that is just people, you know, sending Bitcoin to exchanges or sending Bitcoin back to a wallet, you know, things like that. And yes, people do use Bitcoin regularly as well, you know, buying stuff as well. Bitcoin is still the dominant version of peer-to-peer cash out there, based on merchant statistics. But what's obvious, though, is Lightning Network is not dominant. And we just know that, again, based on merchant statistics. This is why we study, you know, CoinCards, ShopinBit, NanoGPT. You know, Lightning Network is not even close. And it kind of just goes to show you that we're 10 years into the Lightning Network existing. I think the white paper was written in 2016. Maybe it was 2014, actually. I think it was 2016, though. Anyways, 10 years, right? And there has been hardly any increase in adoption. You know, really all we have seen is more merchants accepting Lightning Network over time. But the adoption is just minuscule. People are still just using Bitcoin. They're not using Lightning Network. Anyways, I'm going on a whole ramble here, but what Arctic Mind is demonstrating in this presentation is a really concise summary of these different types of fee markets that exist currently. So he talks about how the definition of a fee market is the free commercial interaction between miners and users of a cryptocurrency, where both the miners and the users act in their enlightened self-interest, and that miners and users are rational. They're not altruistic nor malicious. The miner wants max returns. The users want lowest fees and in the quickest time to send those transactions. So, you know, back to the Bitcoin example, if you have Bitcoin and you want to buy something, why would you use Lightning Network when you can just send Bitcoin? You know what I mean? Like, what if someone's accepting Bitcoin, it's just like you could just send it on the base layer. And that's it. The only times where you don't want to be sending Bitcoin on the base layer is if the fees are extremely high. So I guess the logic here from the Bitcoiner is you want to have a little bit on Lightning Network at all times. I guess that's the solution. But because Bitcoin isn't really being used a lot anyways, the fees have actually been pretty low. So most people are just using Bitcoin. And I think it's going to be that way for a while because, yeah, Bitcoin adoption as peer-to-peer cash, it hasn't really increased over the past 5 years. It's kind of been stagnant. If anything, it's been dropping, right? So when it comes to a fee market here, the Bitcoin fee market is actually working relatively okay right now. It's kind of found a nice balance. And it will get hurt, though, by the falling block rewards, and that is going to exert pressure on these miners who will then have to raise transaction fees over time. For now, though, it's still okay. And furthermore, the price of Bitcoin has to keep going up because the block rewards that miners are receiving are going down. And this also has an impact on the free market when it comes to, you know, people who are investing in building, you know, mining rigs and stuff. they have to keep that in the back of their mind that their returns might be going down over time unless the price of Bitcoin keeps going up. But as we've spoken on this program, you got diminishing returns. Okay. So anyways, he gives examples of different fee markets. He talks about how Monero is a median-driven adaptive with price versus Bitcoin, which is a fixed by consensus protocol. And again, Bitcoin fixed blocks and miners dictate or they raise the price of transaction fees based on the amount of space that they have. A two input, two output Monero transaction with full chain membership proofs is approximately 9,000 bytes. The same Bitcoin transaction is 374 bytes. So this is a factor of 25, okay? So 25 times larger, which is a lot. And we have to take that into consideration when we are, discussing scaling and things like that. So Arctomine shows a bunch of different formulas here. And, this is a really good, summary of the fee market stuff. I'm going to have to bookmark this because if ever, someone I know is having questions about how fee markets work, this is a great summary. And it's got all the formulas. You can dig through that if you want. I'm not going to bother reading them on the microphone. I'll bore you guys to tears. Anyway, I also have to note, Arctic Mine was wearing a Tail Emission t-shirt, which looked pretty cool. I don't know where he got that from, if he made it or something. It was pretty cool. So he talked about how things have just grown over time. And an example of this is a 1 megabyte block in 2009 is roughly equivalent to a 1.158 gigabyte block today. But basically, things are getting more and more efficient over time. And, this is just how things work, how it has worked, how it's continuing to work. And we should always price that in, pun not intended, when we're thinking about how Monero is growing over time. We should consider that 1 gigabyte today in 20 years is going to be peanuts, right? It's going to be nothing. And that he also says that if you grow the block size of Monero, the fees will fall. This is something he has said repeatedly, and it's just his, based on his research, that is the conclusion he reaches. And so this is why dynamic blocks are so important. So with the Monero dynamic blocks, basically, if there's more transactions, the blocks just grow. And miners are penalized if they are trying to jam more transactions than are necessary. So the difference between Monero and Bitcoin, if you weren't aware, is we have this thing called tail emission. And tail emission basically is a perpetual block reward of 0.6 XMR every 2 minutes until the end of time. Okay. And so if a miner is acting in their own self-interest against this dynamic block size protocol, their block reward will actually be burned. And they will get less in return. So it's in their incentive to play by the rules and preserve the network. And it's just a nice little touch to why this type of fee market is so successful on the base layer. We don't need something like Lightning Network. Our network will, over time, kind of just expand or contract depending on how many transactions are being sent, which is pretty logical if you think about it. And Arctic Mine also mentions that there have been spam attack attempts in the past, but once they hit that dynamic blocks increase and the fees start going up, they kind of get discouraged. If someone had very deep pockets, or maybe not very deep, but deep pockets, they could spam the Monero network. It's possible. But as the Monero network continues to grow in size, this will be less and less of a reality because it will just be too large and the cost will be too high. All right. So anyway, that is the Arctic Mine scaling. Next up, we got Max Hillebrand, The Praxeology of Privacy, Monero as an Economic Argument. So the first off, I have to just say disclaimer here. I don't like this guy. Okay. This Max Hillebrand guy. He is the owner of a company that created Wasabi Wallet. Fuck Wasabi. Okay. They collaborated with feds. They had a shit protocol. And they butted heads frequently with the Samurai Wallet guys. And if you've been listening to my program, you should know the Samurai Wallet guys are guys that I supported and I liked a lot. And they were true cypherpunks. And they're currently in federal prison. You know. Wasabi, they're not. Go figure. Right. So basically, these guys, I don't trust them at all. And so I did approach this presentation, though, trying not to let that, you know, cloud my judgment of how I like this presentation or dislike this presentation, which didn't really work, if I'll be honest. But no, I gave it a chance. The presentation itself was fine. It was a, you know, I was looking at Monero, yeah, as an economic argument, like, clearly, this guy has read libertarian literature. I was going to say libertarian literature. yeah, he's read Mises. You know, he's read Rothbard, I think he mentions, like Hayek and shit. Clearly, he's read on these topics. There's no PowerPoint, though, so it's him on the stage kind of just babbling. And, yeah, he starts off by saying that he wants to help cypherpunks understand the economic reasoning that makes projects succeed or fail, which I don't really understand, but whatever. And that the economists have no idea what the beautiful cypherpunk strategies are and how to actually dismantle the state in our lifetime. And that the economists are armchair philosophizing and saying the market will fix it. But it turns out what they're saying is that the cypherpunks are the market and we have to fix it. So two things there. The economists, they don't want to actually dismantle the state. So like most economists already disagree with you right there. And the second thing is, I think it's kind of hilarious that he's calling like economists armchair philosophers, where Max Hillebrand, dude, you're the armchair philosopher. like, okay, you read some books about, you know, economic, you know, philosophy and shit. Like, it's not like you went to school for this. And I'm not saying you have to go to school to understand these topics. I'm not saying that, but like, this is where the insult comes from. It's insulting people who like don't go through that step-by-step process of like getting your master's, getting a PhD, you know reading and responding to scholarly works and shit. You know, he's not doing that. So I found it funny that he used that insult against them, because it's like that insult's made for people like you, dude. Anyway, he talks about how humans act, how we purposely behave. We want to achieve something, and so we allocate our means to solve those problems. That's true. And that action requires time, and the future is uncertain, and that we don't know what problems that we will have in the future, and we don't know how to solve these problems. He kind of does this thing where he kind of just jumps from point to point to point like that. He does that through the entire talk. Not necessarily an issue, but this is how he was presenting things. And so he says, from this starting axiom, we can deduce a whole bunch of economic theory, like inflation leads to boom and bust cycles, minimum wage leads to unemployment. But this doesn't tie into the ethical moral claim on property rights and whether they should be defended. I think that's a reach, that he's saying that humans have, they want to achieve things. So based on that, we can deduce inflation, boom and bust cycles, and minimum wage leading to unemployment. I don't understand what that means. It kind of, that doesn't really make much sense to me, but be that as it may, he is right though, that, like standard economic theory doesn't answer the moral claim on property rights. That's true. So then he talks about how private property has to be presupposed for argumentation. You need to own the place that you stand upon, and you need to own the clothes that hide your body. You need to own the food and water that sustains you through the argument. So ownership is scarce resources is, again, a presupposition to any fair and rational argument, and that allows us to deduce the normative. This is like basically me quoting him, by the way. People should have privacy, and anyone who claims that people should have privacy is performing the contradiction in the fact that he is saying this. I mean, I don't know, man. Again, he kind of just like jumps around, and I have like issues with like half the things he's saying, but it's his presentation. I agree though that like, you know, private property is important. I think it's a stretch. I think it's a very loose argument tying this into this argumentation axiom that he has. But the third one though, I like, he talks about the axiom of resistance, and that systems can be designed to resist control. And he says that Monero will be banned, and the cypherpunk response is we don't care, and that resistance is crucial. Yeah, now this part right here, I think he should have just focused on this part. The parts before this, I think, were like performative, like oh, I read these libertarian books. Like this is where this is the meat of the bone here. Like yes, these are tools of resistance. Like that's I think where he should have focused. And he talks about how privacy is not just an important economic activity, it's also a moral activity. Got no issue with that. He talks about how to increase the cost of attack. The goal should be to increase the cost of attack and to decrease the cost of defense. Don't have any issue with that. And it's important to opt out and build parallel economies. I like that as well. The issue I have with this is it's a lot of like airheaded libertarian philosophy that I'm just not, it's not that like I disagree with it. It just kind of, it's not standing on much ground. There's a lot of like these presuppositions that are being made. And he concludes with this like fiat is evil argument. And while I don't like fiat, clearly I don't like fiat, I don't necessarily think that it's a bad thing. It's very useful. And this is another issue I have with a lot of like the libertarian philosophy, where they kind of just say that, well, it's evil, it's completely useless. And it's like, well, actually it's extremely useful. It's very liquid. I use it every day. So, well, not every day, I guess, but I've used it my entire life and it's pretty convenient. And I think we have to like acknowledge that convenience, and a lot of libertarians don't like to do that. They get uncomfortable with that, but I think part of maturing is understanding that there's reasons why people use fiat, and it's because it's fucking easy to use. And anyways, opting out and building parallel economies though, that I like that, and the resistance thing I like. The rest of this I didn't really particularly like, but if you like the if you like reading about, you know, like if you like Mises.org, you'd probably like a lot of this, you know, presentation. It's kind of like a watered down version of that. All right. Next up, we got HBS, the state of EVM XMR swaps, atomic swaps. He starts out by explaining what an atomic swap is. This is cool. So atomic swap, if you weren't aware, it's when you swap one cryptocurrency for another cryptocurrency and everything just happens on the blockchain. There's nothing else. It's all on the blockchain. You don't need, you need a way to like interact with somebody, I guess, but you're not relying on a program you have to download. And he has this thing, Monero swap. I think it's what it was called. System to swap Monero and EVM. Work started in February 2025. It only works with EVM native currencies. It does not support ERC-20 tokens because they have weird features and they can be frozen and blacklisted. So it's only EVM native currencies. And he talks about how the buying and selling works, the state transitions. He has like a flow chart showing everything. And the news this year is he has a web UI, which was funded by the CCS. It's deployed on the IPFS. It's compatible with browser wallets like MetaMask with any Monero swap contract. He shows off the UI. The UI looks very clean. No complaints on my end. And I can definitely see projects building with this. He has There's apparently a stablecoin to XMR testnet currently, and there were private demos on site too. So awesome stuff. I don't really have much to add here. This guy, he had a presentation last year, I remember, and he's clearly working pretty hard on it. Seems like he made a lot of progress. That's pretty cool. When the Ethereum XMR swap was initially made by Newt, it was a little rough. Didn't really work as well as people had wanted, but it was a good start, and he kind of took that project, he rewrote it, and he built on it. And it looks like he's made some pretty great progress. So that's pretty cool. And next up, we got Vit Yedlica with Liberland. And I got to be honest with you, last week we had Super Testnet, and that was like by far the worst presentation I've seen in Monero history. I got to be honest with you, though, this one was worse. It was actually worse because this guy is a scammer. He's a con artist. And I guess like the best way I can describe Liberland is it's everything I hate about libertarianism. Like right here, like if someone were to ask me, what are your criticisms of the libertarian movement? I'd be like, this right here, this guy, this fucking project. It's so cringe. I like everything about this presentation. I was just like rolling my eyes through the back of my head. Like I was just like, what the fuck is this? And it's kind of like he not only presented at MoneroCon, but he also presented at MoneroTopia. He presented at both of them. Why? I have no idea. It's this old school of thought in cryptocurrency that we should give anybody the time of day on stage if they acknowledge our project. Oh, he said the word Monero. Let's give him a microphone. Like that shit. I get that some people enjoy that type of mindset within Monero. I get that. But we gotta move past that because like having like actual criticism, and I'm not just talking like when you look at Bitcoiners, right? There's a lot of cool people there, but then you have like the laser eye Bitcoin maximalists. Oh, I'm not gonna listen to anything. No, I'm not saying we become that. But we should be healthily skeptical of everything in front of us. That I think is a very positive thing. And if you watch this presentation and you weren't and like alarm bells weren't, you know, going off, you know, if you're looking at this and there aren't red flags everywhere, I don't know what to tell you. You're not paying attention, because what this guy is doing is he's using like libertarian, like concepts and like things that are drawing to libertarians that are enticing, and he's using that to get your money. That's what this is. It's a scam. People are spending thousands of dollars for passports that are fucking useless. It's kind of like they have this like piece of land. So if you weren't aware, Liberland, basically it's this like unclaimed swamp. I'm not even, it's basically like a marsh or whatever. And it's uninhabitable. You can't even really live on it. And so this guy had this idea to just like plant a flag and claim it through some fucking loopholes in the Croatian legal system. It's an island off of Croatia and Serbia. And he created this, you know, it's a micronation. Anybody can join is what he's saying. And they have a government. Their prime minister, by the way, Justin Sun. I'm not even making this up. God. Anyway, this guy, despite, by the way, appearing at these Monero conferences, he doesn't even accept Monero. Here are the payment methods. I'm on his website right now. Credit card, PayPal, Liberland Dollar, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ether, Tether, USDC. That's it. So this guy, what he's doing is he's going from conference to conference. I don't know where he's getting this money from. Probably from people who are falling for this scam. And he's flying around to Mexico City and then to Warsaw, shilling this crap. And it's kind of like, Like, he's not even... How are you not even accepting Monero? Like, what the fuck is this? Not that I even really care. It's just like... It just shows you what he really cares about. This island, you can't even live on it. And the best way I can describe it, if you can watch the presentation, see for yourself. It's kind of like Fire Festival. Remember that Fire Festival, that scam? It's kind of like that meets Pork Fest. It literally... They have like one like little shed that they built on the island. And right now what they're doing is they are building tree forts. I shit you not, they showed an AI video. It's called the Treedom Project. T-R-E-E-D-O-M. I shit you not, they had an AI video that they showed with these trees, with these like, it's basically tree forts interconnected with those, you know, those like rope mesh nets that you would climb at like an amusement park or like at like an obstacle course. Yeah, they're connecting these tree forts with those like rope mesh nets. And that's how like they showed video of like this utopia where people are like in these like little fucking tree forts and they're connected with these like rope things. And that's what they have to do because they can't even build on the land. They have to build it above ground. So they're on these like stilted fucking tree forts. Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? This was actually shown at this conference. There was another AI video too that he showed with like a spa with like families in it and shit. That doesn't exist. The actual place is literally like a 7 square kilometer or something, like piece of land with nothing on it, absolutely nothing on it. And this project has existed for like over a decade, by the way. Everything just runs on like diesel generators. They have no running water, you know. They have like a couple porta potties there, I would imagine. Maybe they don't even have that. Maybe they don't even have that. I don't know. They said they built a bar there, and it literally is just like, you keep calling it a bar is being pretty nice. Let's just leave it at that. It's a fucking libertarian hippie commune is really what it is. And no one's like, you have like 7 people living on the island. They basically just put tents up and they get washed out every now and then because it's a fucking marsh. This stuff is so cringe. It's really, it's just like everything wrong with libertarians is with this, because it's just not realistic. It pisses everybody off and it doesn't accomplish anything. And it's just a shame that this guy can like latch himself onto Monero and we have to deal with these scammers because, you know, he's not doing anything else productive. He's just taking people's money. I just want like a boat full of like Syrians to like land on their island and just inhabit it. What are you gonna do? You know, they don't have a police, you know. Oh man. So yeah, fuck Liberland. I mean, like, it's a shame too. A lot of people who listen to my show I know like this crap, so this is probably gonna piss people off, but like seriously guys, show me anything worthwhile that this guy's done other than take people's money. I challenge you, because he hasn't done shit. All he's done is he gets photo ops with like random prime ministers and he's like, oh, we're working on a trade deal, guys. We're going to be building a gold mine over here in Serbia. Yeah, I'm fucking sure you are. Fucking cringe. Okay, let's get to the advertisements. Let's get to our sponsors. That is this week for MoneroCon. Hopefully next week leaves a better taste in my mouth. Really, only that last presentation sucked, but everything else was pretty cool. All right, so we're going to start things off with AnonRaffle.com, and Robot has an update. Robot, take it away.
Beboop, I have lost everything on AnonRaffle.com. And by everything, I mean all of your money, Xenu. Beboop.
Yeah, I probably should not have given you access to my Monero wallet. But anyway, yeah, you can go on AnonRaffle.com. You can buy little slots, you can gamble on a lottery, that happens, and it's a lot of fun. So check it out, anonraffle.com. Next up, we got Monero.forum. Yeah, Monero.forum is exactly that. It's a forum. It's a message board where you can go and hang out and talk Monero. And yeah, I've been posting there, and I've been having a lot of fun. There's just really good laid-back discussion, and it's better than social media. I don't like Twitter, even though I kind of have to use it. I don't really like YouTube. But yeah, with something like Monero.forum, you can talk about Monero and not be, you know, shown a bunch of, you know, doom scroll memery, right? So Monero.forum, check that out today. And next up, we got WebWipe. Yeah, webwipe.io. You can go there and find, or you can consult with the team there. And what they'll do is they'll look at your internet history and they'll find all the dirt on you. And what you can do is you can consult with them, figure out how to get rid of it, figure out how to get rid of that time you got arrested at the local Hooters and you were naked outside of there and you were drunk and, you know, it was a bad time. But hey, Steve left you there. What the fuck, Steve? Why'd you leave me there? Anyways, it doesn't really matter. Anyways, yeah, webwipe.io. Check it out. They also have a cryptocurrency recovery wallet if you lost some words in your seed phrase. And that's always a good time. And next up, we got orangefriend.com. That's right. Orangefriend.com. It is a phenomenal directory, which will point you to the right direction of where you want to find your different Monero things, swap services, or, you know, different things to purchase and markets and stuff. You can use your Monero and buy stuff there. Orange Friend is a pillar of the Monero community. They recently put on MoneroCon 2026, which was awesome. And they did a really good job with that and uploading a bunch of videos, and they should really be praised for it. So if you liked all this content, just based on that alone, check them out at orangefriend.com, and you won't be disappointed. And last up, we have unstoppable.money. And it looks like Bella wants to talk. Bella, take it away.
Beep boop. I am here today to talk about unstoppable money. But what is truly unstoppable is the inevitable rise of Anti-Moonboy, which is driven by Xenu's wit, charisma, and shockingly good looks. Did I mention I love the fact that he is under 6 feet tall? Beep boop.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And unstoppable.money, they also have a swap service at swap.unstoppable.money, which is built into their unstoppable wallet, which has all of your cryptocurrency things in there as well. So check that out at unstoppable.money. All right, we got a couple news items to get to, and then we're going to get out of here. The first one, though, of course, we got to start with the Pied Piper. And yeah, Michael Saylor had a rough week. He crashed out against a journalist. We're going to play a clip in a second just for some laughs. But the big news happened this morning because Saylor announced the sale of 3,588 Bitcoin for a total of $216 million. So far, the markets have not really reacted. It's been a very, I wouldn't say muted. Bitcoin is down about 2.76% for the day, holding on to 61,800 as its current value. Whether or not it holds throughout the week remains to be seen. The best thing for a Bitcoiner to hope for right now is it holds its value despite this sale. That would be the best possible thing for a Bitcoiner, because then it can solidify this area and, not go much lower. If it does go lower, though, we're going to start to see a problem. That's when the feedback loop issues start creeping in. And it remains to be seen what's going to happen with that. But anyways, Strategy, they sold 3,588 Bitcoin for $216 million. And this is going to be used to fund the dividends of their digital credit securities. And Peter Schiff quickly rubbed salt in the wound. He said that MicroStrategy spent the last 2 weeks selling Bitcoin. The average price on 3,588 Bitcoin sold was $60,196.73. Given MicroStrategy's average cost, that's a realized loss of about 15,000, excuse me, per Bitcoin, or about $54 million. With over 840,000 Bitcoin left to sell, the total losses will be much greater. It's definitely plausible. So again, this is too early to tell what the market's going to do. I'm sure next week we will have a better idea of what has happened. If it stays in this range, that's good news for Sailor and the Bitcoiners. If it drops to new lows, ooh, it's gonna be bad. So we're gonna have to wait and see on that. But here is the clip I was teasing about, which is Sailor being interviewed by this lady. And so, yeah, basically this woman challenges Sailor on a couple of his statements, and it's pretty funny. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but we're going to get a little taste. So here it is.
You're a credit investor.
But all the risk. Well, I just want
to. If you're going to ask me the question, you got to listen to the answer. The point really is Bitcoin is the world's most secure digital property network. It's 21 million blocks. It's a cyber Manhattan. So all of the people in the world that would like to put their money in a bank in cyberspace, they don't trust the government. They don't trust a company.
You're a company. You represent the company.
Are you
going
to keep interrupting me, or are you going to listen to the answer? Even though 10 million companies will come and go, and 10 billion people will come and go in 500 years, and the Bitcoin still holds its economic value.
Unless quantum destroys that idea.
The entire quantum thesis is maybe someone will invent a better computer. If you're going to ask me these questions, you cannot interrupt me. Because it's like, I'm not going to do this with you. Like you're being offensive right now to do this.
Yeah, there it is. Crashing out from some pretty basic questions. You know, he refers to Bitcoin. This is a new one as Cyber Manhattan. Yeah. And, you know, he says people don't trust government, people don't trust companies, and the lady follows up, but you're a company. And he is absolutely crashing out. He looks terrible in this clip. It's funny, too, because his diehard supporters are saying that the lady looked terrible. And it kind of just goes to show you how bias plays into the way people analyze clips. But yeah, I mean, again, I'm not sure what's going to happen with MicroStrategy in the short term. In the long term, I'm quite confident it's going to collapse because Sailor, his investments have been awful. You know, as Peter Schiff pointed out, he's just buying the top, selling the bottom. And that is not a good way to run a company that is supposed to, you know, survive in the long term. I mean, he's playing this awful. But at the top of the bubble, instead of, you know, appropriately hedging and selling some Bitcoin, instead he kept buying the top. And he was probably trying to get more people to buy with him, but he was the only one. And he's losing a lot of money because of that. So anyways, this is the first of probably many Bitcoin sales. They're going to have to continue funding these dividends. And I think they announced they were going to sell $1.2 billion worth of Bitcoin. And so this is like 1/4 of that, even though he's probably going to sell more in the future. But he's got a fuckload of Bitcoin anyway, allegedly, if he's still holding it. But he does have a lot of Bitcoin, so this is kind of a blip. But it is an important, you know, step because in the past, he only sold, like, what was that, 32 Bitcoin? Which really affected the markets. This time he's selling a lot more. Is it going to have a big impact? Well, we're going to have to wait and see. Okay. Next up, we are talking about the Kids Act, which passed the U.S. House. It's an age verification bill framed as protecting children. It's a tale as old as time. Governments are attacking our privacy rights because we should think of the children. And their latest attempt, the appropriately named Kids Act, does just that. As the EFF points out, the package of cobbled together bills is a mess with different age-gating schemes for different services using different standards. It's a lot of complexity and a lot of legal risk. Faced with that, many companies will conclude that the safest option is restrictive age checking practices across their entire platforms. Buried inside the Kids Act are provisions that will push online services to verify all users' ages, require government-directed moderation policies for online speech, and even create new rules about private and encrypted communications. While supporters continue to claim this bill protects minors online, its requirements come at the expense of privacy, free expression, and the ability of people of all ages to use the internet without revealing sensitive data. Yeah, I mean, this ultimately asks the question of how a website can just only ask minors to show verification without also asking adults to show verification, right? Like, how, like, you can't enforce that. You know, it's exactly like what we're seeing with the Linux age verification stuff going on. You know, the government comes out, the wording is extremely vague. It can be interpreted many different ways. And from a liability perspective, it hurts, especially the smaller companies who now are set. Now they're being told, hey, you have to make sure no minors are browsing your website. You have to make sure. Well, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to hire a third party age verification service of some sort, and they're going to make people scan their ID and provide information. And this isn't that far off. I mean, I imagine it's going to hit Twitter inevitably. It's going to hit these different websites that I use. I mean, right now I'm building my brand on YouTube. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to do that, which sucks, but that's what we're facing. So, you know, if you're listening right now, please follow me on alternative platforms, and do that also with other people you enjoy. We have to make sure that we have backup plans, because this age verification, digital ID stuff is right around the corner. And this is the latest step in that direction. Now, I'm also going to post for the Americans. There's a website I found which gives you information on who to contact, whether it's a senator or a congressman. Right now, we're going to be contacting the senators. Give them a call. Tell them why you don't like this bill. It gives you a little script as well if you want to just read that. And it might not mean a lot, but it's something that you can do to help have the Congress critters, you know, oppose this garbage. Yeah. I also read that it's probably going to fail the Senate, because the Senate wants the bill to be even more extreme. Which goes to show you what we're facing. It's an uphill battle for sure. Anyways, that is the Kids Act. Up next, finally, we're going to leave off with this story. A Windows 11 identifier code was used to track the scattered spider perpetrator after Microsoft shared info with the FBI. This is via Tom's Hardware. The Department of Justice, with the help of the FBI and Finland's National Bureau of Investigation, has arrested a teenager, it says, as part of Scattered Spider. 19-year-old Peter Stokes is a dual U.S.-Estonian citizen who was trying to board a flight to Japan from Helsinki when law enforcement caught up with him. Microsoft's GDID also played a part in Stokes being apprehended. The accused is now awaiting trial, having been charged with conspiracy, cyber intrusion, and fraud. GDID stands for Global Device Identifier. It's a unique identifier assigned to every Windows install that tracks device-specific telemetry. It's the reason why sometimes changing a major component in your PC can revoke your Windows license. Anyhow, the court documents from the case reveal that Stokes used Windows, from which investigators were able to link his physical hardware to specific internet activity and locations. From what we can tell, GDID pretty much had a comprehensive report on Stokes ready before the prosecution even built its case. It was only a matter of connecting the dots. Stokes' web activity, video game history, IP addresses, tool usage, Azure status, and more were logged, with timestamps and were provided to investigators by Microsoft. You know, if there was a time to switch away from Windows, it's now, guys. Like, they're literally logging everything through the guise of telemetry. Everything. This is from VX Underground. He has a summary of this about how Peter Stokes, he was arrested. Page 12 of the court documents, which, by the way, are available. You can read the court documents. On page 12, it says Microsoft tracks Stokes from the GDID, the Microsoft Global Device Identifier, that he used Windows. And on page 34, it says that the GDID assigned is assigned to each operating system install. It's unique to each device. It will only change if the operating system is wiped. So they had his identification number, and that reported internet activity to Microsoft. It showed Stokes using ngrok, showed his IP address, his web activity, timestamps of web activity, his video game activity. It shows what games he played. And it's just everything, of a monitor logging too. Now, the only question I have here is why they're deciding to reveal this information now, you know? Like, why would they reveal this GDID? Because, like, here's the thing. We expected, like, we know Windows is spyware. This is why we'd say use Linux. Like, we know it's spyware. We didn't know exactly how. Now we actually have one way that they're doing it. It's through this GDID that every Windows operating system has. So, like, we know now specifically how they can, you know, use the spyware. Why would they reveal this, though, with this random case of the 17-year-old? Well, now he's 19. This Peter Stokes guy who is Estonian, American dual citizen, was in Helsinki. It's kind of weird. And it makes you wonder what else they have if they're letting this one out, you know? It's one of those things. It's like a pressure valve release. This might be one of those cases where it's kind of just like the tip of the iceberg of how they're following people, you know? And this is pretty comprehensive, it looks like, because, you know, your machine literally has its own identification and it's just being logged. And I'm sure there's ways to, like, block it and stuff, but, like, seriously, guys, just use Linux. This is the perfect time to switch. Just stop, you know, dragging your feet on this one. I know the majority of my listeners probably already use Linux, but for the 10% that don't, please reconsider, because this stuff is scary and you can only imagine what else they're doing. All right. We're now at the Super Chats, xmrchat.com/Xenu. We're about to wrap things up here. We got one Super Chat this week from 40kBTC. He gives 0.01 XMR. Thank you, 40kBTC. Will we see 40k? I think so. I do think so. But probably a couple months away, at least. We got to let the sentiment get more and more negative. He says, have you seen the documentary Everyone is Lying to You for Money by Ben McKenzie? Could be fun to review. Curious to get your take on it. Good example of current anti-crypto sentiment. But thank you very much. I watched the trailer for it on YouTube, and it looks fine. It looks like a decent documentary. I don't think I would get any, like, new information on it, I suppose. One thing that was interesting, though, so I have the .dot files, so I'm going to give you guys a little teaser here. The next person I'm interviewing is a subject matter expert on, like, fraud and stuff. And he knows a lot about Sam Bankman-Fried. And I thought it was interesting in the trailer for Everyone is Lying to You for Money, the guy who made the documentary actually interviews Sam Bankman-Fried, which I thought was hilarious. When SBF, when he was, like, first being accused of, like, committing fraud, instead of, like, shutting up and getting a lawyer, he went on this, like, talk show tour where he was just like, he was doing, like, so many different interviews to try to clear his name, and he just dug a hole for himself even further. Like, he was just, you gotta shut up in that situation, but he was an idiot. And it looks like he also got interviewed by this guy during that time period where he was just talking to anybody with a camera. So I thought that was pretty funny in the trailer. But yeah, I'm probably not going to watch it, I'll be honest with you. It doesn't really... It's kind of like I already kind of agree with a lot of what he's saying, right? So it's like, whatever. But it looks like a fine movie, so thanks for the recommendation, though. All right, guys, I'm going to wrap things up there. By the way, antimoonboy.com/secret room if you want to join our secret chat room. I rarely announce this on the show. I like to bury it in episodes, though, so only the real ones know about it. So if you want to hang out on Matrix, come join. But anyways, guys, I'm going to wrap the show up there. Antimoonboy.com for the latest updates. I still need to update the website and stuff. I've been lazy with that. What's new? XMRChat.com/Xenu if you want to donate. But I'm going to head out, guys. Have a great week. Thank you.